One of the things I do for fun is hang out with other menopause experts and discuss complex or interesting cases. Sometimes these discussions occur in a panel as part of a medical conference in order to educate other doctors and healthcare professionals. And sometimes these discussions occur privately, as in, I really want someone else's opinion. In this episode, I'm going to chat about a complicated patient with one of my go-to experts, Dr. Risa Kagan. I'm Dr. Lauren Stryker, a gynecologist, best-selling author, and a nationally recognized menopause expert. When it comes to menopause midlife and what comes after, I'm betting you've not gotten a lot of information from your own doctor. If women are given good information, they'll make good choices. And I'm here to give you the inside information. Dr. Kagan is at the top of my list when I need a second opinion, not just because she's super smart and experienced, and not just because she's a friend and one of my favorite people, but because she was part of the research team for many of the drugs that are used to treat menopause when they were in development. And she understands them on an entirely different level than I do. And today, Dr. Kagan and I are going to collaborate on solutions for a perimenopausal woman who has hot flashes, bone loss, a history of a blood clot, doesn't tolerate progesterone, and a family history of breast cancer. And you get to eavesdrop on our conversation. Welcome, Dr. Kagan.
Thank you for having me here today.
You know, this is one of the rare times that we're chatting on Zoom. It's so much more fun when we are chatting in person, which is how it usually is. Today, we're going to talk about a complex patient. And, you know, I was thinking about this before we get started. I mean, isn't it nice when someone shows up in your office and they have like no medical problems, no special concerns? They're just having hot flashes and they come to you and say, hey, what can I do about the hot flashes? And you can prescribe any number of either non-hormonal or hormonal things based on maybe their personal preference and their insurance coverage. But that never happens, right? You're not seeing that patient. You're seeing the patient who comes to you for the second or third opinion because they're complicated and their own clinicians are not comfortable treating them.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So to that point, this patient is she's about to walk into your office. Okay. You ready?
Ready.
Came through my Instagram account. Hi, Dr. Stryker. My name is Beth, and I'm 51 years old. I've been flashing for 2 years now and no end in sight. I really want to try estrogen, not just to help my hot flashes, but also because my mom had osteoporosis and died after a hip fracture. I don't have osteoporosis yet, but I'm really worried since I've been told I have low bone mass. My doctor won't give me estrogen because my grandma died from breast cancer. My doctor wants me to take Raloxifene to protect my bones and my breasts, but that won't help my flashes. I would also rather not take anything with progesterone since when I took it years ago to help with some irregular periods, I got really moody and bloated. I need some help here. So, okay. She's looking for hot flash help that's going to benefit her bones. She wants to avoid progesterone. She thinks she can't take estrogen, which means she's eliminated pretty much every product out there. And she has a doctor who is clearly not a menopause expert. So you're going to help her out here. But before we get into the nuances of this case, can we just start with her statement? My doctor won't give me estrogen because my grandma died from breast cancer. I mean, I know we're going to say the same thing, but I'm going to let you say it.
Okay, that's absolutely not a contraindication for a woman taking menopausal hormone therapy, estrogen at all. But really, they just don't know what to do. And they're afraid, these doctors. And what we know, Lauren, is that there is a 20-year gap in knowledge from medical students to our board certified colleagues in both primary care, interest in women's health, or OBGYNs who really do not know about the ins and outs of the latest guidelines for hormone therapy. So that's not a contraindication.
No,
but I understand
the
concern.
Yeah, and her doctor is very typical. And you are absolutely correct. Those kind of messages are out there because they really don't know and they're not comfortable with hormone therapy and they just don't even want to go that direction. So we both agree the first thing she probably needs to do is find a new doctor. But lucky for her, she lives in San Francisco and she's just jumped your 6-month wait list by bribing your receptionist with chocolates and flowers, and miracle of miracles, she is now sitting in your office. And even though you have just explained to her that estrogen is not going to give her breast cancer and that her grandma's problem is not a reason that she cannot take estrogen, she still wants to know about her non-hormonal options to deal with her bones, her breasts, and her hot flashes. So let's start with Raloxifene. trade name Avista. She brings
Right.
that up because her doctor brought it up. So what are
Right.
you going to tell her about raloxifene?
I love raloxifene. It's a great drug, and it actually has been studied extensively in younger and older women for maintaining bone mass and preventing fractures of the lumbar spine. But the problem with raloxifene, it's a non-hormonal agent that sits in the estrogen receptor and acts like an estrogen, but it's not an estrogen. The problem with it is it causes hot flashes. So for any newer menopausal woman, raloxifene, which brand name is Avista, just won't work for that woman. Maybe years later, like 10 years from now, if her hot flashes go away, and we know the mean is about 7.4 years for hot flashes, that might be a good option for her. There's also another important factor for raloxifene. You may remember the drug tamoxifen that we use for adjuvant therapy for
Right.
people who are at hard risk or breast cancer, where there was a very big study that looked at women who were high risk for breast cancer, and raloxifene, like tamoxifen, reduced that risk of breast cancer by 50%. So she, it is a good drug for her, except that it will cause her to have hot flashes. And that's why I would never give it to her at this point in her life at 52
Yeah.
years of age.
And not to mention, not only will it cause her hot flashes, but a lot of people say, well, then how about giving it with a little bit of estrogen? But she can't do that because
You
they're both with the
absolutely can't do that
same
because let me
receptor.
tell you, raloxifene, which is called, I'm going to say this big word, a selective estrogen receptor modulator, or a SERM, is a class of agents, okay, that has been studied with estrogen. It was a great idea. Years ago, they took a little estradiol and a little raloxifene, but together it caused buildup of the lining of the uterus, something called hyperplasia. It caused polyps, bleeding, and even cancer. So you really can't just take any SERM and any estrogen, put them together and take it and think that's going to be the answer to all answers. So that doesn't work.
Yeah, and that's such an important point because very often we are layering drugs when one drug won't solve all the problems. And sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes that works. And we're going to talk about layering with some other things. But in this case, you cannot layer raloxifene with estrogen. Now, you mentioned that
Absolutely.
it causes hot flashes. And I'm wondering if we're giving the same statistic. I generally tell women that about 6% of women will get hot flashes on raloxifene. Is that accurate? What do you tell
Well,
people?
it depends on where they are. In other words,
Well,
this
let's
is a
say early
woman
on, we're talking about with like in this
early
patient.
on, I
She's
think it's much higher than that.
already flashing,
Yeah,
she's already.
no, you're talking about women who say went through their worst, they restarted it to try something maybe a little bit later from their final menstrual period. And then, yes, a reactivation of hot flash is about 6%. But
So
the
we are.
newer, yeah. So the newer women, I don't, it's much higher than that. It'll just make their hot flashes worse. So we generally stay away from giving raloxifene to newer, younger postmenopausal women.
We are crossing raloxifene off the list and let's move
Absolutely.
on. Let's
Let's move
move on
on.
to the SSRIs and SNRIs, which I've talked about in a lot of prior episodes, the concept that drugs that are FDA approved as antidepressants can be used off-label to alleviate hot flashes. So, is an SSRI an option for this woman in addressing all of her concerns?
Well, officially, the only SSRI that is approved with the same rigor, when I say rigor, the FDA really has a way that you must study both efficacy, will it work, and safety for women. And there is only one and only one that has really been studied in large studies called Brizdel. And it's the lowest dose of paroxetine or Paxil, a lot of people know it as 7.5 milligrams. It's hard to get. It's expensive. It does work. You take it at bedtime. And the good news of that drug is that you don't have, when you abruptly stop the drug, something called the serotonin syndrome with withdrawal symptoms. And you also don't have sexual side effects.
Or the weight
Now,
gain. Or the weight
or the
gain.
weight gain,
Yes.
or the weight gain.
A
That's
lot of people
true.
say, why not just use a higher dose?
Right.
Why not use
Forget it.
a higher dose paroxetine? And it's going to do the same thing for you as far as hot flashes,
Right.
but then you're going
Right.
to get the bad stuff with it.
Right. So many of us do use other agents like venlafaxine, otherwise known as Effexor, and we use lower doses. And there's studies with both Lexapro, escitalopram, and Celexa and Prozac. They're all been studied and largely in our breast cancer population survivor because they can't use estrogen. So there is some efficacy over a placebo, a dummy pill. But I will say that many women are reluctant because it's an antidepressant here. They're not depressed. It's an anti-anxiety medication. They just don't want to go on it. And they also feel like a stigma associated with it. And they don't want to have sexual side effects. And we also know these are healthy women with hot flashes. So that's not usually an option for many of my patients. I would say the one that most try, because if their hot flashes are really bad at night, is something called gabapentin. And that's used again off-label. It's a seizure medicine. It's a pain medicine. People use it sometimes as a mood stabilizer, but it does help people sleep, and it works for hot flashes as well. But nothing as
Dr.
good as.
Kagan, this isn't going to help her bones. We haven't solved her problem yet.
Oh no, not at all. So what we have two approaches for women. Either you do something like a hormone therapy, menopausal hormone therapy, that yes, will preserve bone mass, even reduce one's risk for fracture, depending upon the dose, and help hot flashes and help the vagina. Let's not forget the vagina.
We're going to
Okay.
get to hormones in a minute.
Okay. Or if we use these other components, these other therapies, alternative therapies, then you have to piecemeal our therapies. So that woman could be on an alternative for the hot flashes. And on another agent, a bone-specific agent to prevent bone loss, a lower dose of something called alendronate. The brand name is Fosamax. There's a whole bunch of those, which we do give women who are at high risk for fracture to prevent bone loss, especially in the perimenopausal and early years around menopause. So we do have options for women who really cannot or won't take hormone therapy.
Right. And I think that's such an important point because we were talking about layering medications, and this is a way that is safe and effective that you can layer to cover all the bases, if you will. But when we get to non-hormonal options, the one that people really need to know about, and I did do an episode on this a while back, but it's
I
so new
heard
that a lot of
it.
people did not hear it. But fezolinetant, the
Well,
trade name is
yes,
Feosa. So
that's
what's
right.
fezolinetant going to do for her as far as her hot
Well,
flashes?
I was just about to say, if that woman came in and really wanted a non-hormonal agent, the drug of choice for non-hormonal agents with the best, largest studies, best efficacy, and safety data is what is fezolinetant, which is the brand name, but we call it Feosa. It's a 45 milligram tablet taken once a day and has really been vetted and studied, and it is worldwide studied, and some studies are still ongoing, but has been approved by the FDA in the United States since last spring and has been available since last summer. It's a once a day pill that really targets the area in the brain, the thermoregulatory center, we call it, and it targets that area specifically to reduce both the number of hot flashes and the severity of the hot flashes. But it's not going to do anything for her
Not going to
bones,
do anything in the
and it's
bone.
not going to help her vagina either. So
Exactly.
again, it is definitely a great agent for women who cannot take someone who's had a history of breast cancer, endometrial cancer, somebody who had a blood clot, they can't take estrogen. Veozah is the drug, or they won't take
Or they
estrogen.
won't. I think that's the biggest category, is the person whose their perception is that they can't take
That's
estrogen.
correct. Or they're afraid.
And
They're afraid. They're
fezolinetant.
afraid to take estrogen.
They're afraid, or their doctor has made them afraid. But fezolinetant is a great option. And the other thing that they found in the clinical studies, of course, is people were sleeping. They were actually
Yes.
sleeping. And when we think in terms of hot flashes, a lot of people, it's at its worst during the day, but for the majority of women, it is at night that they just cannot get a decent night's sleep. The other thing about fezolinetant that I always really want to emphasize is, unlike a lot of the older drugs, this drug was tested in all ethnicities and sizes of women. Too
That's
often, when
true.
we look at older clinical trials, and let's face it, they are primarily being tested in white women who have a normal weight and no medical
That's
problems.
true.
And the company that did the development of fezolinetant, of Veozah, they did really an extraordinary job of including multiple ethnicities and body types in their clinical trials. And that's very meaningful.
Yeah, 20% of the women were non-Caucasian, which for hopefully down the road, we'll have more studies like this. Yeah. But they really went out to recruit women who qualified, who were absolutely not typically white. And because people respond differently to different drugs, as we know. Yeah. So it's good to know that.
So here's a question for you. In the study of women's health across the nation, the SWAN study, that of course has generated an incredible amount of data that has been important data and helpful data. But one of the things that they found in that study is that hot flashes are independently associated with greater bone loss and higher bone turnover.
That's correct.
And when I say independently associated, meaning when you take all the other risk factors away for having osteoporosis, you know, things like smoking and family history and the things that we've talked about so often, but just hot flashes alone seem to be associated with bone loss. So do we know if you treat the hot flashes using something like a fezolinetant, is that going to help with bones just by virtue of the fact that it decreases the hot flashes?
Well, isn't that interesting, Lauren? No, there's absolutely no data. Even to tell you something, there's an association with VMS, hot flashes, as you know, with not just bone and bone loss and all of that.
A long list of things, yeah.
And it's not directly related to how much estrogen or any of that. But we don't have the data to say that if you treat them, you're going to end up having less, except if you're treating with estrogen. And I'll tell you something else. VMS has been associated as a marker of cardiovascular.
VMS, vasomotor symptoms.
Has also been associated, as you know, with many comorbidities related to down the road cardiovascular issues. Yeah. And unfortunately, and our good colleague, Rebecca Thurston, has done a lot of this information. She'll say, well, the link that hasn't been made yet is treating them. Is it going to cause less of these, you know, conditions down the road? And I think that's the big leap now that we have to see as far as the future.
We don't know. And there was a study going on at Northwestern on stellate ganglion block, which we're not going to get into today. It's experimental, but basically doing a nerve block that decreases hot flashes. And I wanted them to include cardiac markers in that study to see if those cardiac markers would improve once the hot flashes went away, because that was a non-hormonal approach, because we know it's going to improve with hormones. And it was like, okay, if you get rid of the hot flashes doing something non-hormonal, is it going to help? And all the investigators thought it was a terrific idea, except there was no funding for it. It's amazing how you just add in a couple of blood tests and suddenly you're talking at
a lot of money,
huge, huge increase in money. So there's so much work that needs to be done and no money.
Around hot flashes specifically and sleep.
Hot flashes, yeah. All right, so I'm going to ask you another one that there's probably no data, but I'll ask you anyway. So we've established that you cannot take raloxifene, Avista. You cannot take it with estrogen. What about if you were to take raloxifene with fezolinetant? Because the fezolinetant is going to take care of the hot flashes and the raloxifene is going to take care of her bones. What do you think of that, Dr. Kagan?
It sounds interesting. They work in different ways. I will tell you, they do work in different ways. You know, fezolinetant is not working on the estrogen receptor.
Right, but that's why. That's the beauty of it.
Well, that would be a very novel, wonderful, interesting study to see if the raloxifene. We do not know, though, whether the fezolinetant, which is working in a certain area centrally on these things called the candy neuron, which you can look at, Lauren, your podcast that you talk about, the candy, not candy, K-N-D-Y, not right. K-A-N-D-Y.
Not chocolate, right.
And and you really beautifully described how it's this balance. But fezolinetant is, Veozah is not working on an estrogen receptor, whereas raloxifene is.
Right. So you can use them together.
Maybe, but you know, I don't encourage my colleagues to just take one drug and another, and basically, because we don't know, until it's tested, I believe that they should be tested in order to really see what happens.
I agree as well. And just to be clear, in this podcast, we are not giving
advocating
recommendations. We are just giving
education.
Information and having a discussion,
right?
Which is much what we do when we get together.
Right.
We talk
right.
about
and
this.
And Lauren, what I always say to people, and show me the money, show me the testing, show me the safety and the efficacy. So we really don't want to give something that you don't has never been tested before.
No,
so I wouldn't want to take that. So okay,
no, I'm with you.
Okay.
All right. So you told her all of this and she's saying, okay, I really don't want to take a bone drug and a drug for my hot flashes. So, okay, I'm ready to hear about estrogen, but I really, really don't want to take progesterone.
Okay.
Now, I did do a whole episode called The Progesterone Problem and kind of ran through all the alternatives to progesterone and get around some of the side effects that women have trouble with, like the bloating and weight gain and just not feeling good, feeling a little down and all that kind of stuff. So I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about alternatives, but I do want to mention a couple of my favorite ones. So would she be a good candidate perhaps for an IUD? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, totally. In fact, I go through the list also for women who cannot stand progestogens, and we use that word that includes synthetic progestins, which are commonly used, as well as natural micronized progesterone, which mimics what our, you know, ovaries are putting out. And I'd say more and more women want to use that. But even
and which,
that,
by the way, people tolerate better. You know, we don't.
Do
if this woman
better.
Used something years ago, it was probably hydroxyprogesterone acetate, trade name Provera, which is the synthetic one,
and
that's
maybe
one that makes people feel icky.
Right, and maybe your patient who comes to my office, that what she really didn't like was the synthetic progestin. So of course, I would try the micronized progesterone, which we call Prometrium, and if she really didn't like that, believe it or not, off label, I might let her try it in the vagina, because we also know that when women take those pills and stick them in their vagina, they do absorb them. It protects the lining of the uterus, and we use it in pregnancy also. You know that.
Okay, wait, back up. You just finished making the point that we don't do stuff that hasn't been really, really well vetted and well tested. And maybe you have to send some of these articles my way, but I have not seen a whole lot on how much uterine protection you're actually getting with vaginal progesterone.
Well, there is a gel out that is called, it used to be called Crinone. And many people have, there are studies on using that for endometrial protection. So based on that, and then I do believe there are some small studies in using vaginal progesterone. You can absorb it. We know that from blood levels. Now, do we have the real evidence? No, but you know, we're trying to help people, and we do share decision making. And I can also monitor the lining of the uterus with an ultrasound. And frankly, this is better than unopposed estrogen, meaning you take estrogen and you have a uterus and you don't take any progesterone at all. So we have many women that love estrogen, and they will say, listen, do a biopsy man every year, do an ultrasound every year. I'm taking that risk with shared decision making because I want estrogen, but not progesterone.
So you brought this up. So I'm going to circle back to this because I wasn't actually going to ask you, but now that you brought it up, I will. When we think in terms of taking unopposed estrogen, what we do know and what we tell patients is that if you take estrogen alone without something to protect the lining of the uterus, either progestogen or some of the other things we're going to talk about, that there's a tenfold increase in the development of uterine cancer down the road. But that data is very, very old data. And it was based on a time when women were taking significantly higher doses of estrogen. You know, back then, they were taking almost double of what we give women now. So is there any more recent data using a much lower dose of estrogen, a 0.5 of an estradiol, or maybe a 0.45 of conjugated estrogens, that also shows that very significant increase in uterine cancer?
Yes. The PEPI data, which is not like yesterday, okay, but it was out in the last 20 years, okay. I forget the year that PEPI was published.
It's been almost 20 years, I think.
Yeah. So PEPI had an estrogen alone arm, and after 3 years, those, and then it also had the natural progesterone, micronized progesterone. I say it mimics our body, and it had the synthetic progestogen, medroxyprogesterone, and PEPI alone showed after 36 months. There was about a 33% increase in endometrial hyperplasia.
What dose of estrogen were they taking?
0.625 of conjugated estrogen, which is Premarin, which is equal to
the
estradiol, 1 milligram, or a patch of a 0.05 patch. So we do have data on endometrial hyperplasia and cancer of unopposed estrogen, and there's many other studies as well. I don't advocate that, but I will say that there are women until recently with this drug that I love that I'd like to get to here,
We will be getting to it in just a minute.
called Duavie. We had a lot of women who really wanted to take unopposed estrogen, and we monitored them with the lining of the uterus, with the sonogram and the biopsy, and we try to stay low. What I would do in that case is stay low, low, low. And I mean, lower the dose of estrogen. I will tell you one thing, everybody who's listening.
But then you're not going to protect your bones, right?
You can protect your bones with both low dose, and you have a less risk for the lining of the uterus developing something called hyperplasia, which is a pre-cancer and endometrial cancer, uterine cancer. So the lower the dose, the better for cancer risk of the uterus. And yes, we do have some bone protection with the low doses, even the ultra low dose. And there was a patch that a colleague of ours published, a 14 microgram patch, the lowest of the lowest. Okay. And may he rest in peace, Dr. Ettinger, who after 2 years of a weekly, very low dose patch, and they found efficacy for hot flashes. Now the average age was 63, but after 2 years, they did not have endometrial hyperplasia on that dose to when they did biopsies at the end. So.
But a couple of caveats with that. I mean, that's obviously very reassuring, but hyperplasia can take years to develop. And when
True.
we're thinking in terms of particularly bone protection, I mean,
Right.
flashes, we're looking 7 to 10 years on average, but we're looking at the greater good of what is estrogen going to do for your bones and your vaginal health and your brain and all
Right.
of that. So
Right.
I think you and I are
So,
pretty much
you
in the
know,
same camp that for most women,
yeah.
we're not saying take it a couple of years and go off. We're looking
No,
at the long
I
haul.
know. I
The
know.
other variable as well that I think is important to mention is that the women who are greatest risk for developing hyperplasia and uterine cancer are women who have obesity, because
Right.
we know that there is formation of estrogen in fat cells. And I think we have to be very careful in terms of treating those women to not do anything that's going to increase their risk more.
I will agree with you, and I'll tell you the best woman to take estrogen alone, and I'm not advocating estrogen alone nowadays because we have many other options, are women who have a hysterectomy, so they don't have their uterus. But you asked something I didn't answer, and that is about the levonorgestrel Mirena IUD. And that is my next go-to. Before going on the drug we're going to talk about, I will say
It's
if a
like
woman,
Voldemort before we get to the drug that we haven't mentioned yet.
because people need to know about Duavie. We're going to talk about that because a lot of people don't know about it. When I
A lot of
tell them
doctors
this,
don't know about it.
I know, and they look at me and they go, "Why didn't anybody ever tell me about this?" And levonorgestrel IUD is off-label, but it's used in Europe, and there are some studies, and we are using it as a local form of a progestin to the lining of the uterus. Women have minimal absorption to worry about side effects, and women don't bleed, which is really nice because that's one of the number one reasons why women go off menopausal hormone therapy. Two reasons: fear of breast cancer and breast tenderness, and an effect of breast density on their mammogram. They throw it in the basket. And abnormal bleeding. Who wants to bleed postmenopausally when you're
I
on
didn't want to
hormones?
bleed premenopausally.
Right.
You forgot the third reason. The third reason is their gynecologist prescribes it and they go to their internist who
That's
says,
right.
"Oh my God, go off
Right.
that right away." So there
Right.
is that reason too. All right,
Fear, fear.
we're going to finally get to what you really want to talk about, the reason you agreed to do this podcast and take time out of your busy, busy, busy schedule. But we are going to talk about one of your favorite drugs to prescribe, and that is Duavie.
That's
And
correct.
Duavie is a combination of vasodoxifen and conjugated equine estrogens. I do have a chapter on it in my Hot Flash Hell book, but I haven't covered it during a podcast because, first of all, I was waiting for you to say that you would come on and talk about it. But second of all, for a long time, you couldn't get it. You know, it was FDA approved in 2013, and then it disappeared from the market in 2020, and it just came back. So, before we talk about the drug itself and the pros and cons and what people need to know, can you just explain why it was taken off the market and why it took so long to bring it back?
Well, believe it or not, well, it was approved in 2013, as you said, and it was just picking up. A lot of people are just learning about it when in 2020, in the height of the pandemic, Pfizer had a recall of all of the drug worldwide. This is worldwide. There was a packaging issue, and oxygen was getting in and destabilizing and deactivating the agent. So they withdrew the drug completely, and they tried multiple different remedies to fix this problem with this inner packaging of the product. And they just couldn't come up with it. It took 3 years. I mean, it finally came back this last spring, and we're very happy it's back here. And there was no issue with safety or efficacy. It really had to do with getting oxygen in that was really deactivating the product. And now they did a workaround. They finally found out what they had to do. They have this to help, preserve the packaging the way it should be.
And
So well
that's the
done.
number one point. There were no concerns about the drug itself. It was just stabilizing it and the packaging. And I thought the reason why it took 3 years isn't because they couldn't figure out the right packaging. I think it's because Pfizer was so busy developing and getting the COVID vaccine
I
out there that
know.
they put women's health on the back burner, because isn't that what always happens?
Well, that's what people said, but I've talked to people. I don't think that really was a
They
story.
would
It's a
never admit
good,
that.
it's a good idea. It was
All right, so
really, it was hell though during the pandemic, because all there were women who go on this drug and love it. They love it beyond your imagination. And we're very
I rarely talk about myself, but Duvet was the drug that I was taking. I was hoarding it. I found samples in the office, and you would have thought it was gold. Everybody was like, "No, I want it. I want it." And so we were all hoarding it, and then even I ran out of it. All right, before we get to, there's two components to this drug. I want to start with talking just about basodoxifen, because as I've talked about many times, the majority of combination menopausal hormone therapies are a combination of estrogen and a progestogen of one type or another. And this is not a progestogen. This is estrogen with basodoxifen. So what is basodoxifen?
Well, remember we just talked about raloxifene and we talked about tamoxifen. Well, basodoxifene is in the same family. It's called a SERM, a selective estrogen receptor modulator. It is a product, it's a drug that is made to sit in the estrogen receptor and block the estrogen receptor in certain parts of the body. So it's an antagonistic, we say. And it stimulates the estrogen receptor in other parts of the body. Those are what these SERMs are. And
And
there's a whole
that's, you
bunch.
said that, SERM stands for selective. That's what we mean by selective. It
That's
selects
correct.
which estrogen receptor it's either going to stimulate or which receptor it's going to block.
That's
And a lot
correct.
of people call these designer SERMs.
Oh, yeah. Designer estrogens was the old term years ago.
Right. Because you pick out what is it going to do? Tamoxifen blocks receptors in the breast. And raloxifene, as we were talking about, stimulates receptors in the bone. So tell us about what basodoxifen is selective. What
Well,
does it do?
I want you to know that all SERMs actually are very blocking in the breast, just to keep that in mind. And they all really are good for bone. Okay. But where they differ is in their effect on the uterus, causing hot flashes. They usually all cause some, and also on the vagina. So let's just start by saying basodoxifene is a SERM that has been studied extensively in Europe and worldwide, but it did not get approved in the United States because it's not that dissimilar to like raloxifene that we have here. But in Europe and many other countries, Japan and a few other countries, basodoxifene is a standalone drug that has been approved for the prevention of bone loss, prevention of osteoporosis, and also treats fractures like raloxifene does of the lumbar spine specifically. So basodoxifene is a standalone drug in other countries, but in the United States, the company that makes basodoxifene decided not to go forward for an approval here in the United States, and we just don't have it available to us in the United States
Yeah,
as a standalone drug.
I'm going to circle back to that in a minute. But all right, so you've established that basodoxifen is going to build bone, help bone,
Stop bone loss.
and stop bone loss. What is it going to do on breast tissue?
Okay. So basodoxifene is a little unique, and I've actually spoke with some of the people who discovered it. Instead of just blocking the estrogen receptors, and this is in some animal studies, I will just tell you, but instead of just blocking the estrogen receptor in the breast and the uterus, okay, what it does, it actually degrades that receptor, the area where estrogen would work, all right? So it's very selective for the receptor in the uterus and the breast, and blocking it and degrading it. And it's what's called an estrogen degrader, okay? So that's something that's unique about basodoxifene. And some brilliant researchers said, gee, do we have, what would it be like? This was like years ago, even before that big WHI study. Wouldn't it be amazing if we could test an estrogen, specifically conjugated estrogens, which is called Premarin? Now, this was the number one agent on the market forever, okay? And it was held by Wyeth, that then became Pfizer, and they also had basodoxifene. So these brilliant PhD researchers and bio, you know, they basically said, let's see what would happen if we tested first in animals, then after the animals, they went to human studies, different doses of the Premarin or conjugated estrogen and different doses of basodoxifene, with the goal of finding that, remember I told you the ideal menopausal hormone therapy? And what is the ideal? Treating hot flashes, not causing breast density or breast pain, or we don't have enough data about breast cancer yet. But we
Well,
do.
we're going to talk about that
Okay,
in a second. We're getting there.
but wait, and it doesn't cause abnormal bleeding and a buildup of the lining of the uterus to cause hyperplasia or cancer, all right? And it doesn't create any side effect like more blood clots or, you know, something like that. So they went and started testing different doses of this combination. And I was an investigator on many of these clinical trials called the SMART trials. And worldwide studies, they've studied it in 7,500 women. And one of the studies, which was very early on, which looked at bone, hot flashes, safety on the lining of the uterus and the breast as well, that study even studied women from 45 to 70 years of age. Most of the other studies don't go that long, and that was a 2-year study.
That's huge.
And then the last study that we got, we call SMART 5, was really another large study with over 1,800 women in it. And that study, what they studied against a placebo, the dummy pill, was they looked specifically at mammograms and breast density, because we know that breast density is a marker of future risk for breast cancer. There's no breast cancer data on this agent, but it does lend itself to a lot of, you know, interesting research. Okay, will this agent, which combines a certain dose of Premarin, conjugated estrogen, with a certain dose, 20 milligrams of basodoxifene, and it really is being looked at specifically for women, say, who are at high risk for breast cancer.
And just to as a reminder to everyone listening, in the WHI, in the group that took estrogen alone, the 50 to 60-year-old group, there was an 18% decrease in breast cancer. So if you combine the conjugated equine estrogen with basodoxifene, as you said, we don't have the data in terms of what kind of decrease or protection you can expect, but certainly it makes sense that there will be a significant reduction. There is a multi-center trial that's going on that I'm sure you are aware of, if not involved in, because you tend to be involved in a lot of research. And this is a study where women who have been diagnosed with DCIS are given Duavi. They are given estrogen and basodoxifene, and then they rebiopsy them to see, without any other treatment, to see what happened to the DCIS. And those results, to my knowledge, have not been released yet. The
No,
last
not
time I
yet.
checked, it was still ongoing. But the fact that we have a bunch of breast oncologists who are totally on board with this, I
That's
think sends
correct.
quite a message.
Yes. And there's another study going on for women who are at high risk for breast cancer. And then they are going to give, and they have hot flashes, and they are going to basically be given this drug, Duavi, for 6 months. And then what they're going to look at is breast density specifically. And then they're also going to look at some non-direct imaging of certain biomarkers in the breast. So there's a lot of interest for breast and breast safety related to this drug Duavie. And as I said, it got the official approval based on dosing studies, okay, for, and in this country it's Duavive, and worldwide it's called Duavive. So Duavie and Duavive, I don't know why, but basically it has been approved officially since 2013 for the treatment of moderate to severe hot flashes due to menopause and to prevent bone loss related to menopause in newer menopausal women, as well as women who are further away from their final menstrual period. So they actually looked at two different groups of women to check bone loss in, and it preserves bone loss. So,
What is the impact of Duavie on the vagina?
well, I was the lead investigator in that study,
Of
and
course.
I will
Of
tell
course you
you,
were.
it did not get the official approval for what we call, now we call GSM, genitourinary syndrome of menopause, but vulvovaginal atrophy, because it missed a few endpoints, but it was very efficacious in many ways. And we know that in clinical medicine, you look in women's vaginas, most women on Duavie report that they are comfortable and don't need extra estrogen in the vagina, maybe a lubricant or moisturizer. But I will say it did not get the official approval because to get the approval, you have to meet certain endpoints, and
Right.
it missed a few endpoints.
Well, not to mention, when you look at any systemic estrogen, there's not one of them that is going to, in 100% of women, eliminate vaginal dryness and pain. And at least 15 to 20% of these women we need to supplement
That's
with either
correct.
local vaginal estrogen or something else. So it
And
certainly
it
sounds like
depends
it
on
is.
the dose of estrogen. You know, I tell women the last place to get it is the vagina. So, of course, the higher the dose estrogen, and we'll get to the vagina eventually, but not always, as you said. But the lower dose estrogens that we use, and I'll tell you, this is Premarin 0.45. It's conjugated estrogens 0.45, which is a little bit lower than most many of us use in newly menopausal women, especially.
That's
So we sometimes have to give an extra estrogen to the vagina.
So we've established that Duavie is safe, and we've established that it's effective in terms of bone health and hot flashes. When it comes to hot flashes, is it as effective as other menopausal hormone therapies?
There's no head-to-head trials. Now you know that.
I know.
Okay. So, you know, but it is, that's why they did different dosing. And I believe in SMART1, there was a reduction similar to estrogen, like you see, for 0.45 estrogen. I mean, they had a placebo response, it was greater than the placebo. But, you know, I think there was a 74% reduction, which honestly, you know, you have to remember that estrogen alone is the gold standard, but you can't do that if you have a uterus. Okay. So here you are blocking some of the positive benefits of estrogen with the bezadoxifene. All right. And listen, we had six doses that we studied. You have no idea how hard this was.
No, actually,
And
I've heard about this study and I'm floored at
yeah,
how
that, and they
complicated it
finally
was.
came up with the 0.45 and 20. And there was also a 0.625 and 20 that was investigated at the end. The FDA only approved the 0.45 and 20 because you have to really balance all of the
Yeah.
efficacy versus the safety.
Okay, but let's talk about this 0.45 dose because, quite frankly, that I think is for a lot of people an issue.
It
Because
is.
when we are prescribing estrogen, whether we're using an estradiol that we're giving someone a 1 milligram or a 2 milligram,
That's correct.
or if we're giving someone a conjugated estrogen and they're either using a 0.45 or 0.625, it is not one size fits all. And
That's
there are
right.
many women who have very, very severe hot flashes and they require more estrogen. And it's easy to do when we're using estrogen and a progestogen separately because we know how to balance it. We know how to make sure that we have enough progestogen to protect the lining of the uterus, even if we go up on estrogen.
That's true.
Bezodoxifen, it's a little trickier. So if we have a patient, your patient, comes in and she's taking Duavae and she says, "But Dr. Kagan, I'm still flashing. I'm still flashing. What are you going to do for that patient?"
Well, we have to have a discussion about the pros and cons. And it depends on how old they are and whether they started it newly menopausal. I will say, if a woman wants to transition from what they were taking, which might have been a higher dose, to this Duavie, they may not be so happy because it's a lower, slightly lower dose, and they have to
But she's
decide.
happy because now she knows her bones and breasts are protected. So
That's
she loves her Duo-V, but she's flashing. Are you going to give her a little extra estrogen?
Well, I know from clinical research that they did study a dose that was slightly higher, and it looked pretty safe, but not perfect. So
When
one
you
of the
say safe,
reasons,
you mean in terms of uterine protection?
that's correct. And that one of the reasons why the FDA did not approve the higher dose was that they wanted more. There was a little bit of proliferation. That means growth. There wasn't hyperplasia or cancer, but there was some proliferation of the lining of the uterus. So maybe 20 is not really enough long term for that higher dose of estrogen. But in the short term, and this is really off label, Lauren, okay, we experts for women who have a good reason can't tolerate a progestogen, they can't stand the bleeding, they have terrible family history of breast cancer, and they're so anxious about being on it. I think some of us do sometimes add a little bit more estrogen for a period of time. And I have one woman who I actually, found the sweet spot with a little more estrogen, and she was could never take a progestogen. So it's better than being on unopposed estrogen. And I monitor her. I do an endometrial sonogram. I look at the lining, and it's very what we call off-label. It is the art of medicine.
But again, we're talking about what the superstar experts are comfortable doing.
That's
Most people
correct.
are not. All right. So this patient who's still in your office, it's been a very long consultation, but she's still there. And she's all happy because she says, "Great, this is going to take care of my hot flashes. It's going to protect my bones. It's going to protect my breasts. It might even help my vaginal dryness." And then she drops the bombshell and she says, "Ooh, I forgot to tell you that when I was taking birth control pills, I had a blood clot and I was told that I should never take oral estrogen." And in addition, she says, "And I gotta tell you, I love horses and I really worry about the idea of using horse urine and that it's going to be, mean to the horses. And I don't know if I'm so happy about taking this particular estrogen." So let's very quickly put the horse issue to bed because I hear two things about horses that when we talk about Premarin, one is that it's not natural. And I'm thinking, okay, humans are a lot closer to horses than they are
That's correct.
to plants.
That's right.
So, you can
I
scratch the
say it's
natural
very
thing.
natural, and they treat them like gold. Let me just tell you
They well,
that.
that's the other thing too, is they treat these horses like gold. And the idea that they, put them in these horrible positions and they tie stuff in these urine bags and they beat them and they starve them, it's just simply not true. And there's actually very, very good data, which you can find if you look in the right places, that looks at the treatment. So we're going to put aside the horse issue, but I just wanted to mention it because it comes up a lot.
Our vegan, or my vegan patients won't take it. There's no question. They absolutely won't. And so,
In the early days, they took urine from pregnant women instead of pregnant horses, but that didn't go so well for a variety of reasons. But anyway, all right. But the bigger issue is that this woman is concerned about blood clots, and we do know that when we think in terms of estrogen, that the thing that does concern us is that oral estrogens do have a slightly but significant risk of developing a blood clot. And in general, if we have a patient who is at high risk for a blood clot, we're going to put them on a transdermal estrogen.
That's correct.
And but this is an oral estrogen. So she says to you, "Well, why don't I just use one of those transdermal patches or gels or something and take the basodoxifen separately? Because I want this magical pill, this basodoxifen, but I don't really want to take the oral estrogen." What are you going to tell her?
Well, I'm going to tell you that basodoxifene also has a risk for blood clots, and it's pretty equal to estrogen. So that's why early on, when we were doing the studies for Duo-V, we were concerned that there might be an increased risk of blood clots because they're both working at the estrogen receptor and they both have an increased risk for blood clots. And but guess what? We found out that they're working at the same estrogen receptor and there was no increased risk for blood clots. But in your this patient, I would say, I am so sorry that I'm not comfortable giving you an oral estrogen and an oral SERM together. And she is not a candidate right now for this agent, and
Yeah, so
that's
we're going
too
to put the
bad.
IUD in her uterus and give her some transdermal
Well, some people, it depends on the etiology of her blood clot from the
estrogen.
birth control pills and with what is surrounding it, because some people will not do that
Of
even.
course, the
So
devil's
then we
in the
have to go back to
details.
Veozah and a little vaginal estrogen and maybe some, or follow her bone densities and see if
Okay.
she's losing, she's got to stop
All
with
right,
a
I'm
little.
going to switch it up a little bit. I'm going
Right.
to say that the blood clot wasn't her problem, but
Okay.
her friend was on an oral estrogen and it killed her libido because she didn't have as much testosterone available. So she was switched
Right.
to a transdermal and
Right.
she did better. And
All
even
right.
though she didn't come in talking about her libido, she says, "You know, I would just rather use a transdermal estrogen. And can I take basodoxifen separately?" And
There is absolutely no way that I would allow somebody to use a transdermal estrogen and get basodoxifene from Europe, okay, and combine them, because we have no idea at all about basodoxifene with estradiol until you test it. We do know, do you know that estradiol is not exactly the same as conjugated estrogens, which is made up of 20 different types of estrogens, and some of it is estradiol, and some of it is estrone, and some of it is equiline, and some of it is this mix of estrogens. And not there are people that do feel that conjugated estrogens is a very different breed of estrogen than just estradiol.
And it's
So,
better. And it's better.
and
I mean, we
some,
know who those people are
yes,
because we
we
talk to them
do.
all the time. And I think that that's an important message, that there are scientists and experts out there who really understand these different types of estrogens and who don't make this blanket statement that, oh, it has to be a plant-derived bioidentical, and
Correct.
that this whole idea that because something is plant, that it is safer. We know
Right.
that's not the case. And
No.
certainly we can make the case that a conjugated equine estrogen in many ways has a number of advantages over the plant estrogens, but
Right.
we're battling what's going on out there in
You know,
terms of
I always
people's
say to people
perception.
when they bring up this thing with the friend and the libido, and if someone comes in complaining, we do want to change them to a transdermal delivery of estradiol, because then it frees up their own free testosterone by not raising
The sex hormone binding
right,
globulin and all
exactly.
of that, yeah.
But honestly, I say to somebody, you're not your friend. Who knows if it's going to be a problem? You may be so happy sleeping without hot flashes. Please try this agent. And you may have more libido because you're finally sleeping and you have energy for sex. So I think that's what I would say to her.
And I would say the exact same thing because
Right.
that's the truth. When we talk
Right.
about libido, there is nothing that is more multifactorial. And to say that it's just one thing, and that if someone switches from an oral to a transdermal, then suddenly they're going to be in the mood, it's just not the case. There's too many other things going on.
You and I often agree on everything, Lauren. So this has really been
This
fun.
has been fun. Is there anything I didn't ask you about Duvet that I should be asking you? The patient's
No.
left already. She's exhausted. She went to have lunch and said, "Thank you very much." She took her prescription for Duvet. She doesn't
Yeah.
really, the blood clot, she was actually wrong. That was her sister. She's fine.
Okay. Okay. No, I just think it's something that should be in many people's little armamentarium as one of the options for hormone therapy for women who are symptomatic and would like to preserve their bone mass and get some of the benefits of estrogen without having to be on a progestogen. I will say one other thing. The lack of breakthrough bleeding and what we call amenorrhea, no bleeding on this drug is amazing. So that would be another reason if someone kept coming in saying, I've tried so many different kinds of combinations and I just keep bleeding and spotting and I don't want to bleed and I don't want to spot. One of the things that has been shown again in the last big, what we call SMART trial, was the amenorrhea rate, the lack of bleeding was way better than when they compared it to the conjugated estrogen with the medroxyprogesterone. And it was similar to the dummy pill. So that
Okay.
is another one. Breast density was the same as the dummy pill placebo. The abnormal bleeding was the same. And it was efficacious for hot flashes. And it was a way in which we could give women hormone therapy without being on a progestogen. And I have one other comment. Every time I give a lecture about Duavie or Duavie worldwide, somebody gets up and raises their hand and asks, what dose of progesterone do I need to use with this agent? It's important to know that if you are on this for hormone therapy, you do not need to use a progestogen. That's the point of it.
I'm amazed that you get that question, but nothing should amaze me anymore because you
It's
and I have
always
both been
one
on
of the
that
first
stage and
questions.
up at that podium too many times when we get questions and we just look out at this audience like, where have you been?
Well, then
We're
I don't
talking
think I'm a
audience
good.
of doctors, not audience of women. We don't expect women to
And
know
I
this.
think I'm not a good teacher because they didn't get
They were
it.
checking their email instead of listening while you were talking. But yeah, no, but this it's really interesting. And again, it's so funny how we circle back to how we started this. And this is a woman who went to a doctor who wasn't helpful. And instead of saying, I'm not an expert, let me refer you to someone who is, she gave misinformation. And
That's
that's
correct.
the major thing that we're battling. When we talk about drugs like this and we can say, how come doctors don't know about it? And how come the word isn't getting out? And we're doing our part to educate doctors. And the real issue is why is it that doctors are not okay about referring when they're not an expert? You know, we always did. If we had someone who had a condition that we didn't treat, or you know, whether it was fertility or a very high risk pregnancy, we referred them to someone who could help them. And
And they can find some, certified expert like you and me, or even a member of the Menopause Society at www.menopause.org. I'm telling people that all the time.
all the
And
time.
then you
You know,
find,
though, it's interesting, though, because Risa, I will tell you that I mention it, of course, all the time. It is in my program notes. The most common question that I get on social media every day is I live in fill in the blank. Where do I find a doctor? Where do I find a doctor? So that message is not getting out there. And granted, in some places, if you're in LA or New York or Chicago, you're going to have a lot of people to choose from. And if you are living someplace more remote, you quite frankly might not have anybody who's a certified menopause practitioner. But whereas years ago, I was not a fan of telehealth, I have changed that
I
because
agree.
it is, first of all, there's some companies that do an outstanding job that they're not online pharmacies. They're actually giving menopause care
That's
and good
correct.
information. But it's also the reality is that there is not access. Women can't find these doctors. They can't get to them. And this is a way for women to access evidence-based good care and finally get the help they need.
That's true. I also want to just say one thing. They're not all doctors. Some of the best menopause practitioners are advanced health nurse practitioners and PAs. They are delivering some very good care, and they are also certified, many of them, and they know a lot about menopause.
They're actually
So
delivering most of the care. I mean,
that's
it's
correct.
very interesting how this field has evolved because certainly when I was running the Menopause Center at Northwestern, and this is still the case, the overwhelming majority of care is delivered by our phenomenal menopause certified advanced practice nurses, physicians assistants, and that is certainly the case throughout the country. And that has really been one of the things that has been a huge, huge boon to menopause care because these are people who've taken the time to educate themselves and give outstanding care. Anything else? When am I going to see
Well,
you
thank
next in
you.
person? I don't know. What's our next
I
conference? I don't know
know.
what's coming up.
I know.
ISWISH,
Well,
maybe. I don't know. Are you going to ISWISH?
I don't know yet. It's in
Me neither.
California, though. So,
I know.
yeah. So, thank you so much. This
Thank you.
was
Thank you for
great.
spending this time. And I will put all kinds of information in the program notes because we threw a lot out there. I'm Dr. Lauren Stryker, and thank you for joining me. You will find lots more information in my Inside Information books available on Amazon.com. And follow Francie as she navigates her way through vaginal dryness, hot flashes, and pretty much every menopausal symptom you can think of.
Blue. She helped me see the light. sleeping through the night.